The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It's Monday, the 1st of September, 2025, and you are on the clock with Aaron Green. And of course, today is the anniversary of the landfall of Dorian on Abaco. It's 2025, it's the 6th year anniversary. And we take a moment to remember those whose lives were lost during that horrific, terrific event. We surely have not done enough to commemorate the lives of those lost during that horrible storm. We surely have not done enough to provide for those who lived through, who survived that horrible storm. And we have not done sufficient to commemorate the event, the moment, the lives, the saviors, the rescuers, the people who gave their life, their lives to save others. We have not done enough. I mean, there should be a national event. Why? Because we live in a hurricane zone. Will this be another thing that we invisibilize for political expediency? Another thing that we pretend does not exist, did not exist to make the job of governance easier. It may make the job of governance easier, but it does not make the job of living here and surviving here easier. It is September 1st, 2025, and the hurricane shelter in Abaco is not open yet. See, not is it a structural problem, not only is it an operational problem. It seems like we have an ideological problem, as if you govern but cannot figure out that you're supposed to be centering the people in your governance and not the money, not the economy, not the power, but the people. It is a tragedy. For me, it is disgusting that 6 years past Dorian, and still the shelter is not open. We have people living in what I used to think was unapproved housing options, trailers. I hope that every dome has been deconstructed and sent to salvage, where nobody should be living in domes at this point. The derelict duty is just disgusting. That you would demand that your citizens celebrate your nothingness in the face of all they have to live through. This dereliction of duty is disgusting. Somebody has to speak for the lives lost. Somebody has to speak for those still struggling through. Abaco say they, somebody say Abaco have a whole PM and still not enough. To those, to Abaconians, to Grand Bahamians, to those that survived the storm and to those that didn't, we apologize. We have not done enough. And at some point, we will acknowledge our collective dereliction of duty. But today, we stand with you. You take all the space you need. You take all the space you need. Because if today is the only day that it will be recognized, then today is your day. We got lots to talk about this morning. I'm going to give you the numbers to call. We got a lot to get through, though. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720. Text line 422-GR96, that's 422-4796. I remind you of the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition open to junior and high school students across the archipelago. Call the show. Tell us you want to play the game. We'll transfer you to the producer. You give him your answers, and you'll be notified whether you submitted the correct answers. All right, let's start. Saturday night. I didn't know. I thought we were in a war zone. With all respect to people who are actually living in war zones right now. Salvage yard fire on Adley Street. I perused the papers this morning. Of course, I got stuck up on a couple of headlines, but I have yet to see an article talking about the fire at the salvage yard on Adley Street. Well, let me tell you why this story should be in the papers. Because witnesses observed, they suggest they saw a lightning strike. A lightning strike hit a vehicle. Well, a lightning strike in the area, and they surmise that that lightning strike resulted in a direct hit on a vehicle in the scrapyard, a vehicle in the scrapyard that may not have had its gas tank drained, which may have had some fuel still left in the vehicle. Well, this is important because we've had an increase in not just severe lightning incidents, but direct hits and direct hits in that vicinity. A few weeks ago, we had a complete BTC outage. All five of the services were unavailable for a short amount of time, and they quickly got mobile cellular and mobile data back up, even though it was a little shoddy. But we suspect that that outage was the result of a direct lightning strike as well. And did anyone see a tornado? Or anybody see direct, you know, did you observe it? Did you see it on the video? I saw a tornado, video of tornado yesterday. I wasn't sure if it was a family island or if they were on the southern side of New Providence, but it was a large tornado. I mean, not, I'm saying it's a large tornado. People who live in Tornado Alley will say, Miss Green, you don't know nothing about tornadoes. They experience in tornadoes that are miles wide. But this one, tall and huge. It's just a little scary, as we should all be concerned about tornadoes. Here's why this is an issue. Could somebody tell me where I could find a continued discourse, public discussion about our local response to climate change? Like, the government is out all over the world. I saw a piece on Beyond the Headlines where the weather people were talking about their response from the global community at the carbon credits conversation. But where's the local discussion? Where are the public awareness and education campaigns drawing attention to the increase in tornadic activity and severe lightning activity? Where's that happening? Since we live in a hurricane zone, who is helping us prepare for that? Let's go to the phone line quickly. Good morning, caller.
Oh, bless. Good morning. Sorry, I'm just calling for the WhatsApp number. I need to send you a video of something that just happened on East Bay.
Okay, send it to 432-1757. Is it a traffic incident?
Yes, 432-1757. 1757. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll send a text with it.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I'm going to talk about traffic. I see you, caller. Give me a second. On my way to work this morning, heading west on Eastern Road, approaching Blair, traffic slowed down. Why did traffic slow down? There was a car that stopped in the turn lane. They're heading eastbound, but there's a turn lane to turn into Blair. Turn lane so that you don't disrupt eastbound traffic. Vehicle was stopped there with the turn signal on, and then somebody got out of the vehicle on foot and walked up the hill into Blair. And then the vehicle that they got out of turned in the same direction that the woman was walking. I too was stunned. Not as stunned as I thought the police officer who came up behind me would have been. You know, like, he should have been stunned enough to follow them and ask them, like, what type of madness is this y'all practicing in the road this morning? Like, you stop and obstruct traffic in a turn lane to let a pedestrian out, to obstruct traffic some more for the vehicle that the pedestrian came out of to turn in the same direction as the pedestrian? See, when we talk about the D-average, because we can talk about it, this is what we mean. Good morning, caller.
Hey, morning, Ms. Green. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Okay. Hey, we didn't take COVID serious. We don't take hurricanes serious. We don't even take a possible earthquake serious. We never took AIDS serious. We most definitely didn't take COVID serious. You think we can take a tornado serious? I can 100% guarantee you, if a tornado come, someone will be in the middle of the tornado doing a WhatsApp, saying, "Oh, look at me, I am the tornado," just for likes.
I hear you. I hear you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right. I got a text who said it was just a water spout. It's just a water spout. Texter, thank you very much. I appreciate you. To clarify it, I wasn't sure if it was a water spout or a tornado. I figured it was a water spout, you know, that appeared as if it could have been about to touch land. Typically, we experience water spouts, but we have seen an increase in on-land tornadic activity. All right, see that text there. So, there's a lot happening on the road this weekend. I saw images of a what looked like an 18-wheeler, long bed, short cab. It took out, you know, those signs, the concrete signs. You know, like at the entrance of a subdivision, and they have a wall, and then they have like the name of the subdivision on the wall. It's like the truck took out the whole thing and pushed it up the road. Took out the whole thing and pushed it up the road. You know how much the concrete weighs? Forget the cost. You know how much it weighs. You know what would have happened if pedestrians were nearby and got crushed by that? I mean, there are lots of images captured over this weekend, the last few days, of bad, horrible accidents. And we are going to share today an unfortunate accident this weekend in Grand Bahama. Man dies in early morning crash on Grand Bahama. investigating a traffic fatality after a car crashed into a utility pole on Queens Highway early Saturday morning. The newspaper identified the name of the fatality, the victim, although the police had not officially identified them up to press time, I guess. The accident occurred shortly after 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. The victim reportedly appeared lifeless when he was found in the driver's seat and was later confirmed dead by emergency medical services. I just want to know why y'all be flying in Grand Bahama and Eleuthera. I mean, speed is without a doubt an issue on those islands. Let me tell you why, because a number of the accidents only involve one vehicle. Now, they could be like what we call a hit and run, except technically a collision didn't occur. Like a collision almost occurred, and to avoid the collision, one of the vehicles veered and then ended up crashing, and the other vehicle did not remain on the scene. Right? I don't know if that's what's happening. But we say condolences to the loved ones of that individual. I'm going to refrain from calling their name just in case all family members have not been notified yet. So we got some more stories we need to read into the record. There's a salvage yard fire on Adley Street. Residents nearby suspect it was a lightning strike. Another fire at BPL plant in Central Andres. I guess not North Andres this time. Electricity supply was knocked out early Sunday after a fire broke out at the Bahamas Power and Light plant in Fresh Creek. BPL said its 1.1 megawatt trailer unit caught on fire, leaving all consumers between Love Hill and Bering Point without power. The outage in Central Andres occurred around 6:30 a.m. The extent of the damage was not immediately available. That was the first story out. We continue reading. Marvin Green, regional manager of the Northern Region Family Island Division, says the station is currently out of service. They've lost some switchgear and cabling. A trailer unit caught fire and was destroyed. As of yesterday, they were awaiting the delivery of two rental generation units from a vendor in Grand Bahama. They said mobilization was expected to commence that afternoon. I guess that may be Saturday or maybe Sunday. And the equipment available at the North Station will be used to further support the restoration. You know what I would like? I'd love for y'all to include, right, like in your investigation, an assessment of whether this fire could have been contained if y'all had adequate fire services on that island. Right? Because then I want to know if the residents could sue the government for negligence, considering that everybody in government should have been aware of the crises that was the lack of adequate fire resources across the archipelago. I'm just wondering. Let's go to the phone line quickly. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron Grant.
Good morning.
So far, and I hope I'll be back to school for those folks in school.
Mm-hmm.
Vehicles, be careful, and I'm looking for my generation on the road. But I had a good weekend so far. You know, today's American holiday. A lot of football on the weekend.
That's good. What you talking about? Because I know what I'm talking about today. It's not open line.
No, I know. I don't get your topic. What's your topic again?
Dereliction of duty. Negligence and dereliction of duty.
Yeah, I would go into more detail. What do you mean that these old cars on the road?
Salvage yard fire on Adley Street. Fire breaks out at BPL plant in Central Andres.
Yeah, carelessness. I mean, you can't be careless, but that vehicle could solve that. I don't know if it could solve that problem. I mean, maybe some people call it an absolution. How would you solve it, Aaron?
Which one?
Derelict vehicles on the street.
I'm not talking about derelict vehicles on the street. How would I solve it, though?
Yeah.
I would incentivize salvage businesses. I mean, how could you incentivize them more than you already are? I would get serious about enforcement. That's what I would do. Because there's money to be made in salvage.
What about putting mandatory on vehicles, man? Autonomous vehicles. And treading one by yourself, huh?
Pumpkin Eater, why are you trying to take my show in a different direction this morning? Yes, it's time for a moratorium on vehicles. Let's start with taxi vehicles. It's time for It's time for a moratorium on vehicles. That's a given. We knew that 30 years ago, but a government automotive tax regime centered. They literally can do nothing else but encourage more cars because the revenue that they depend on is, I think, primarily, or one of the primary sources, is automotive tax revenue. So, yeah, we need a moratorium on cars like yesterday. We need a public transportation system, but I suspect we don't have a public transportation system because taxi drivers don't want tourists catching buses, which would be natural to them because the vast majority of them come from jurisdictions where they can't afford to drive a car or do not drive a car regularly, right? Like, I'm glad you raised that because we have a whole bunch of not just political interference, but lackluster and mediocre, unsophisticated and unsavvy political interference mashing up everything. We can't have proper bus systems because we don't want the tourists to catch the bus. We can't get, the bus won't even run at night, even though we have a 3-shift tourism main industry, right? We got people who can't read and write driving cars. We got people who can't see driving cars. We have police who refuse to enforce any traffic regulation. We got authorities that refuse to enforce any regulation for disabilities. We have some of the swankiest, most savviest, most sophisticated, right, multi-jurisdiction corporations in our company making a mockery of the disability regulations. They allow their customers and the vendors that service them to park, they throw their vehicle anywhere, including on the ramp that was designed for wheelchairs.
I guess.
Right opposite. Hold on. Right next to the eastern gate to Government House.
I got you. I got you. Biggest culprit of that, the police. They don't reinforce the law.
Yeah.
They don't reinforce the law. And you mentioned the Hawkins shelter. There's $1 billion in Abaco.
Pumpkin Eater. Okay. You see what I mean? The public consciousness. Yeah, they had a billion when Hurricane Shelter in Abaco, the island that has been devastated most by the most horrific storm in history on this side of the world. And we talk about, I think, the shelter. I hear they build in a shelter. I mean, it's not making any sense. Let's get back to these stories, right? So BPL says that they are on the move. They say they've secured 2-generation units for Andrus. I just want to share with you all this quote. I don't want you all to think I've beaten the people down. Quote, this is an all-hands effort, and I want the people of Andrus to know that restoring their power is our top priority. The people of Andrus can be assured that we will not stop until reliable service is restored, said Marvin Green, Regional Manager, Northern Region, Family Island Division. All right, here's to another Family Island story. RBDF vessel crashes into jetty in Inagua after mechanical failure. Nassau Tribune, 30th of August. A Royal Bahamas Defense Force RBDF vessel crashed into a jetty in Matthewtown, Inagua. I guess a jetty is a small dock and not a big dock. I'm not laughing. I'm just trying to catch my breath. The RBDF said HMBS Durad Knowles lost control of its crashed into a jetty on Saturday morning after experiencing mechanical failure, officials confirm. The RBDF said HMBS Durad Knowles lost control of its controllable pitch propeller system at 7:54 a.m. while approaching alongside, despite the bridge team ordering the engines astern. They unexpectedly surged forward, causing the vessel to strike a nearby jetty. No injuries were reported, and other RBDF craft moored nearby were not affected. The RBDF noted the vessel underwent technical at Fort Pierce earlier this summer to resolve the same issue, but the malfunction recurred. A full technical review and assessment has been launched to determine corrective measures, the RBDF said, adding it remains committed to safety, accountability, and operational readiness. This story right here. This is it. This is the one. This is the story. I don't know what it is about it. I wanted to see if I could get an RBDF officer, like an engineer, on the show to talk to me about how these things work. But then I thought, that's a little bit tricky because whether they're in service, like whether they're retired or not, they may feel like they are breaching regulations. You know, they're breaching convention, speaking about internal matters. Like, I want to know, is this system run by AI? Right? Like, is it an automated voice system? Because when you say, despite the bridge team ordering the engines astern, like, technically, what does that mean? You said engines astern, and the system picked up your voice and was supposed to engines astern, or you ordered engines astern, and a human is responsible for making the quote-unquote engines astern, right? It's a fascinating, fascinating story. Another story, American man dies in boating accident. Police are investigating a boating accident at sea that occurred Sunday, which resulted in the death of an American man. Shortly after 11:30 a.m., officers from the Marine Support Services branch responded to a collision involving a vessel and a jet ski in waters off of Paradise Island. The male rider of the jet ski was found unresponsive with visible injuries. Medical personnel visited the scene, examined the victim, but found no signs of life. Okay, so questions here. We've seen the regularization, the process of regularization in the jet ski sector begin. Do we need to enhance said regulations? Do we need to make mandatory a short certification program before anybody could get on the jet ski? So you have to be certified locally before you could ride on a jet ski. Do we need to insist that no jet ski can be taken out without an operator also on it? Do all the jet skis now have to be two-man jet skis? Do we have to put in legislation that no jet ski, no guest on a jet ski can go out without a guide, an operator guide going out with them? Is that what is going to be required, or are we going to need to increase our harbor patrol? Is it just chaos on the water and people are just doing whatever they want to do? These are questions I have. I'm thinking about attending the Safety at Sea and Continuing the Legacy event. RBDF and U.S. Coast Guard host Safety at Sea and Continuing the Legacy event. Nassau Tribune, 29th of August. A free family-friendly event to promote maritime safety, rescue awareness, and community engagement hosted by the Bahamas Air Sea Rescue Association, that's BASRA, in partnership with the United States Coast Guard and the Royal Bahamas Defense Force will be held on September 6th. September 6th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Fort Montague Park under the theme Safety at Sea and Continuing the Legacy. The event aims to educate the public on maritime safety, showcase rescue operations, and inspire volunteerism in support of ASRA's life-saving mission. Producer, let's prep the caller. Event highlights include interactive exhibits and demonstrations, U.S. Coast Guard helicopter rescue demonstration, RBDF Sea Training Department, life-saving equipment demonstrations, and family-friendly activities. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron.
Hi.
Hope you had a good weekend.
Yes, ma'am.
So just wanted to give you my two cents on the jet ski thing. Years ago, my husband and I went to Key West, and we stayed in a place, and we rented jet skis because you could do it on a tour, you could do it on yourself, you can go all the way around the island, right?
Yeah.
But now this jet ski company was not a part of the resort, but they made us sign a contract, and in that contract, it stated that this operator was licensed and insured and had indemnity insurance. However, by signing this contract, we took the risk, no fault to them, if anything happened to us.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand why our jet ski operators are not, they ought, I don't know if they are, but they ought to be licensed, they ought to be insured, and for the, if I was a jet ski operator, I would want to have indemnity insurance in case anybody sued me.
Mm-hmm.
And the government should require that just like vehicles have to go on the road, they have to be inspected yearly, not that that makes a difference. There should be annual inspections of the equipment. Anyway, that's just my two cents.
Yes, ma'am. I thank you. They're sound suggestions, without a doubt. Thank you very much.
It's not rocket science. It's just, you know, good business sense.
Yep.
I wouldn't operate a taxi unless I was fully insured and indemnified, so that if anybody that came into my car sued me because they said I was driving reckless and caused the accident, I'm not going to have that kind of money, but if I have the insurance, I can.
Yes.
Pay out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's just my two cents.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm going to reach out to the insurance industry, and maybe they can, the association, I think it's BIA, I'm going to reach out to them and see if they can send representatives to talk about the various types of professional insurance coverage, protection available. Here's a text. Good morning, Aaron. The tragic and suspicious accident took the life of Link Jones, a COI advocate. He will be greatly missed. May he rest in peace. But there was other skid mark. So text, I want you to know that I'm not going to read this out loud because I don't want to jeopardize justice, but I'll just say that individuals are concerned and expect a full investigation into the accident to determine there was no foul play. Okay. It's a very serious allegations being made. I want you to know, Texter, that I'm taking them seriously, and that's why I'm not reading them on the air, because I don't want to do anything to pervert the course of justice. Here's another text, Ms. Green. I think some of the persons renting jet skis may be their first time on such a craft. Like you said, a quick safety course may be in order, right? Because there are all kinds of things happening. The people are, first of all, they're on vacation. They're on vacation mode, right? They're in woo-woo mode. Then they're going out on the jet ski on the water, right? Different from an ATV. They may have the sense that because they're on the water, there are no rules, right? More that wee-hee energy. And these people could be intoxicated because they're on vacation, right? We can't be so money-hungry that we turn ourselves into a Sodom and Gomorrah. Let's go to the caller. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Yes, good morning.
I'm calling because as it relates to the jet skis, city ordinances in general, firstly, I'd like to say that the last fatal accident in Exuma was my first cousin, Bernard Hilo.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is hurtful in hearing these things is when I was in the hospital, he was one of the few people that came and gave me blood. So he kind of marched me up and he killed himself. Those wars on the island, I guess, you know, I was just disappointed in him. I was angry at him for actually speeding up getting in an accident, but I realized there's nothing I could do. But these do affect people, you know, as really and truly, right? But as it relates to the Audley Street, you know, I know where Audley Street is, I grew up in Fox Hill, and so
mm-hmm.
This is why a while back I said an ordinance should be that when they store these vehicles, remove the diesel, fuel, gasoline, oils, et cetera, as mandated when you're shipping something from the States.
Mm-hmm.
They require that you train them before you even put them on the boat. These are little simple ordinances that countries can follow. And also, just for the jet ski, I'm calling because I almost lost my life a few years ago at Sanders Beach from a jet ski operator who was speeding excessively. The thing is, I'm a swimmer, so I go beyond the buoy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I was beyond the buoy. The buoy is not in deep waters, but it's, you know, Sanders Beach is set up. And so the fact remains that like cars, likewise, you shouldn't be drinking and driving a jet ski, and it should be a speed limit out there. Mm-hmm. And so the Harbor Patrol should be able to enforce these things. These are simple ordinances. I'm saying I actually almost lost my life because the guy was making speed and he was looking at people on the beach, but he was heading west of where he was, and he was speeding, and I was shouting, but not knowing he couldn't hear me. So I actually had to dive underneath. My heart palpitated. I was afraid. I actually had to go under the water. I tried to put my hands up so he could see me in some kind of way, but obviously the speed kills out there. So when I'm listening to the accident with the tourists, my condolences, but I'm saying that it obviously, something foolish happened. There's no way that you can tell me a big, wide open sea and you colliding with a vessel, Ms. Green.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I'm saying? You have to hypothesize as to what happened.
Yeah.
But it's all foolishness. That's what I'm saying. It has to be. There's no way you can tell me that you could be out there with clear view. It's not like you're in the traffic and somebody's impeding your view. You get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the lack of introduction of ordinances shows that these people, they don't care. I want to mention something specifically. I just happened to be on Pargate Road on the eastern section before I reached Camp Road, and there's a little park there. You know, my daughter went to get a haircut. There's a little park there. I wanted to take a picture of it. Maybe we take a picture of that park. I mean, it's ridiculous the condition that park is in. Ms. Green, the park is only, it's very small. Everybody who goes, it's less than 70 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 30 feet wide, and you tell me now, they can't even maintain that. The sand is dirty. It probably has ringworm stuff. What I'm saying is, it's inglorious. I mean, why do they treat the people in the ghetto like that? Why do they treat the people in Camp Road?
Listen,
who's the MP for that area, Ms. Green? You go home, and when you pass, look at it, Ms. Green. All the slides are cracked up.
Yes.
I mean, oh, God.
Listen, The Guardian, thank you, 52. The Guardian is running a series, the newspaper, I think, digital, running a series. Pardon me, looking at the parks, the state of dereliction of the parks, right? Juxtaposed to Mr. Bonamy, who is currently the authority, the chair of the Beaches and Parks Authority, during his budget contribution, he did not address, I think what was at that time, a $7 million budget overrun. I read, in reading a whole bunch of articles, a question of, I think, another $11 million possibly being diverted to the authority. The Guardian is running a story on the dilapidated state of the parks. We're trying to figure out, it's not just the MP for that area. It's all the MPs. Why aren't all the MPs, figuring out what needs to be done and getting it done, and B, putting pressure on people to get it done? I can tell you why, because it's just children and poor people. It's just children and poor people. Text, some years ago, a jet ski operator passed close to a vessel I was about to board, and the wake from the ski made the boat rock, and they fell between the boat and the dock. Oh, yeah, man, I just, let me tell you something. When you see people running red lights with the children in the car, that's crisis mode. You're watching somebody in severe psychological crisis, right? And we've desensitized ourselves, or we've been desensitized. But we're watching all of these little things happen and we refuse to acknowledge how serious they actually are. And the thing that I just read from the texter, that's a very serious matter. I got another text here that says, said they're in the proper phrase, spin-based taxation regime. Thank you very much. And then another text, it says, the tragedy of our moment is that those who have power have no ideas, and those who have ideas have no power. Absolutely. Okay, so let us turn to today's papers. I see the continuation of the national exam assessment. Today's Guardian, reform needed in math and other key subjects. I think I'm going to talk about that tomorrow, unless there's even hotter news. What could be hotter than the state of education in the Bahamas? I just, before I go, I want to say See, this the D average, and the ministry once again told us y'all don't understand what the D average means. I can tell you what it means. When I was growing up, we wouldn't even be allowed to use that type of language. Take a D out of you, out here. Take it out. Anyway, the point is, it's an assessment of the ministry. That's an assessment of the ministry and its ability to prepare students for exams. That's what the D average is. And I, quite frankly, I think he's scoring high, too high on that, right? But also, you get the education in the classroom, right? And then you leave the classroom and you become an adult. Look at the adults. Look at what they're doing with what it is they gleaned, they garnered, they absorbed from the school environment and the academic experience. That's what's telling. That's the part that's telling. But we can talk about that at a later date. This Tribune headline. I paid Pindling $150,000 per month. That's in quotation marks. That's the headline. Drug lord leader makes claims of government corruption. Emphasis on makes claims. Convicted Colombian drug trafficker Carlos Leader has, for the first time, publicly claimed he gave $150,000 a month to Everett Bannister to pass directly to former Prime Minister Sir Lyndon Pindling. Leader made the allegation in a YouTube interview with former mobster Michael Franzese, promoted alongside his new book, where he detailed how he turned Norman's Key into a cocaine smuggling hub and described a financial arrangement that he said shielded him from interference at the highest levels of Bahamian government. Quote, I had a very good relationship with the Prime Minister, Lyndon Pindling, and part of the secret was discovered, Mr. Pindling and myself, when his liaison was called Everett, we turn to page 7, Everett Bannister, the Prime Minister's right-hand man. He would come to my island every month. I'll give him $150,000, and this is the middleman that brings it to his boss. Close quotes. He said, quote, I'm very comfortable saying this, and it's all in the book. Everett Bannister's son, Gorman, when I was on trial 35 years ago, the young guy came in as a witness against me and told the jury, the judge, and the DEA that his father will bring him sometimes to Norman's Key to pick up the money I paid. So he spilled the beans. He opened up the door to all the situation, too. This is some book. I was careful in keeping that as confidential as possible. All the time, organized crime or smugglers try to grease stories that can stop their business. Close quotes. Leader's remarks revive one of the most controversial chapters in Bahamian history. It's because it's a chapter, it's not a book. You see, they say revive one of the, let me read it, one of the most controversial books in Bahamian history. Just a chapter. U.S. prosecutors in the 1980s alleged that millions of dollars in drug money were funneled into the Bahamas, with suspicions long swirling that Sir Lyndon or those close to him benefited from the cocaine trade. A 1985 Royal Commission of Inquiry established in the Bahamas and amid growing scandals stopped short of proving direct criminal involvement by Sir Lyndon, but found that between 1977 and 1983, his household spending exceeded his salary eightfold, with more than $2.8 million in unexplained deposits made to his accounts. Statistics, I mean, you know, numbers. You could say anything with numbers. Oh, boy, what a thing to say. The commission's findings shook the country, with one commissioner, Bishop Drexel Gomez, dissenting to say he could not accept that all of the payments were unrelated to drug trafficking. Let's stick a pin. I see the phone line is lighting up. Producer, let's go to the phone line. Thanking you. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Mr. Green. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why people don't like the dead? Why you always got to keep on bringing up people who died in the past and what took place?
Is Leader dead?
Okay. Since we'll talk about that, right? You realize in the 80s, right, the main ingredient in Coke soda was cocaine?
In the 1880s, right? In the 1800s.
Space times.
Hold on, in the 1800s, because that.
No.
In the 80s.
In the 1980s to the 90s, cocaine was actually.
No man, maybe if you told me the early 1900s. I mean, because Corinne didn't like us drinking Coca Cola, you know. Maybe she.
Well, you know how addictive Coca Cola was back in the day. That's the reason why.
No, it's still addictive.
That was cocaine.
It's still addictive because of the sugars. But yes, in fact, there was a time when any medication you picked up, it was going to either have cocaine, heroin, or cannabis in it. But that was in the early 1900s.
Well, but it was some strange times.
You remember the part, remember when we were talking about the U.S. indictment, and then in the newspaper, there were these quotes, and one of the quotes was like, yeah, we despite it actually being a breach of the terms of the OPBAT agreement, we no longer let Bahamian officers on the deck where the computers are, where the fancy things are. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. If it wasn't for certain things that took place, we probably wouldn't have been as spoiled as we are now. So, I'm saying this right about what took place or what might have taken place now, right? But you complaining about the conditions we live, we actually spoil as citizens now because of what took place back then.
But we can't bury the dead and then, like, to bury the dead, but then to live off of the dead spoils. If we want to bury the dead, we got to bury all of it.
Yeah, but let things go. We don't let none go.
Okay, before I go to the next caller, you don't think that perhaps we may be experiencing what we're experiencing because we never actually brought closure to it? We just said if we don't talk about it, then it doesn't exist.
Okay, I think sometimes we use that as an excuse for taking place now. You don't think so?
No, I don't. I think the two states are intrinsic, connected. The 40 years is no time. From the 80s to 2020, that 40 years is no time. And it's our hubris as humans to think that our lives are so important that the amount of time we spend on this earth is some massive amount of time. 40 years is no kind of time.
Yeah, but let's say things go, man. Carry on with your life. You know what I mean? Go pay your bills. Go pay your life bills.
Man, I never thought we would reach this point, Uncle. The answer's no. The answer's no. The answer is we cannot move forward without correctly assessing and addressing the past. The past feeds into the present and the future. What we're experiencing now is because of what happened in the past, that we have not properly acknowledged it, defined it, declared it, described it so that we can respond to it is why we're in the state that we're in. You can't have a conversation about the Johnson probe or the U.S. indictment without acknowledging the things that are being claimed, right? Acknowledging, and here's what I'm going to say, acknowledging that an environment existed which means that we have to acknowledge that these that this is possible. Ain't nobody jump up and say this is hogwash. This is absolute stupidness. There's no way that this could have happened. You know why? Good morning, caller.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Thank you.
Two things. First of all, there's no future. There's only the past and the present.
Okay.
Okay. But just for the cocaine and Coca-Cola, by 1929, there was no more cocaine in Coca-Cola. And in 1903 is when they started using the fresh cocoa leaves,
mm-hmm.
and they started using the spent leaves, which actually only left very, very fine traces of it in Coca-Cola. But by 1929, Coca-Cola was totally supposed to be cocaine-free.
Okay.
Okay, so there was no 80s or anything of that sort, just for us to know.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Thank you. I got another text here just as we're closing out. Ms. Green, I've read the book. I think they're going to say Cocaine Cowboys. Would you in public to know that men who was around Carlos Lee didn't know this and are witnesses and are still living? Oh, man. See, for me, I tell you all, I don't need to talk about U.S. indictment. I don't need to talk about Michael Johnson probe to, to assess the state of the Royal Bahamas Police Force. Police officers not following traffic controls. They're not enforcing traffic controls. They're ignoring traffic breaches right in front of them. I don't need to talk about the big, heavy stuff, right? But we cannot continue talking about the state of the Bahamas and what tomorrow's present will be if we don't truly acknowledge what has happened. We are making dysfunctional people. We are creating schizophrenic children, sociopaths and psychopaths, because there's no grounding in anything. Anyway, I gotta go to the post office. I guess somebody send me something from Miami. I hope it's a letter. And I hope it have a dollar in it. You guys, have a great day. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Urie is up next.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau, Bahamas.